Hey, Justin Bourne.
Yes?
Are you Tom Wilson'd out yet?
I just spent the last 3.5 hours writing an article on Tom Wilson, so I should have things to say, but I am Tom
Wilson.
Okay,
good.
Yes.
All right. So this will be a little preview of your piece still to come at Sportsnet.ca. Mike Fuda at the bottom of the hour from the NHL and Sportsnet, former NHL executive. Tonight on Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey, pregame 6:30, puck drops just after 7. It is the Ottawa Senators and the Montreal Canadiens. We'll get there, I promise. But before that, the other game that everyone's eyes are on, including the NHL, and one would suspect the Department of Player Safety led by George Parros, is the Washington Capitals once again at MSG as they face off against the New York Rangers. Now, since the last time we spoke here on this program, a statement coming out from the New York Rangers about the lack of suspension for Artemi Panarin. And I think it's interesting that they direct this one at George Parros specifically, but don't mention anything about the NHL. Why that's important, we'll point out in a second here. But this was a statement yesterday from the Rangers. I'm going to get you to react to this one, Justin, and then we'll talk about what this means and whatever happens tonight. Statement from the New York Rangers. The New York Rangers are extremely disappointed that Capitals forward Tom Wilson was not suspended for his horrifying act of violence last night at Madison Square Garden. Wilson is a repeat offender with a long history of these types of acts, and we find it shocking that the NHL and their Department of Player Safety failed to take the appropriate action and suspend him indefinitely. Wilson's dangerous and reckless actions cause an injury to Artemi Panarin that will prevent him from playing again this season. We view this as a dereliction of duty by the NHL head of player safety, George Parros, and believe he is unfit to continue in his current role. Before we get your thoughts on this one, if you are a betting man, and I know you are, talk to Scotty and Ziggy about this on the morning show, and you were going to do an over-under on the fine that will be levied towards the Rangers. And if we put the over-under at $100,000, are you over or under that number?
I mean, I'm over that number, I think.
Same.
What do you... What was the expectation here of, like, what was going to come of this? Like, the league was going to be like, okay, you know,
well,
he's out.
George, sorry, Rangers said it.
Yeah, like, so that was never going to happen. And if they wanted to make that appeal in private, fine. I'm sure that happens on numerous occasions over numerous jobs when people feel like they've been wronged. But, like, what is the value of this public statement that, like, diminishes... You know, undermines the authority of the NHL. It just looks bad. All I can see is the NHL being like, we can't have teams publicly, you know, tweeting out statements about RP. I'm certain they need to get smacked back into their place a little bit if you're from the league's perspective. So
yeah.
I cannot see that going well for the Rangers. I just can't imagine a single positive outcome coming from the New York Rangers. And now future rulings in the Rangers involving them, I'm sure easing up on them is not going to be the way they lean.
Well, I mean, there's always been a weird dynamic slash relationship between the Rangers and the NHL, even over some... I remember coming out of the lockout in 2005. Do you remember the squabble about the Rangers and how they wanted to control their website and they didn't want the website to look like other websites from the NHL, and the NHL wanted a certain standard? So anyone, whether you're a fan of the Flyers or the Kings or the Canucks or the Oilers or Blackhawks, you can navigate every single site and they look similar.
Yeah, I don't remember that.
Content. But I mean, it was a thing. It was a thing, and the Rangers wanted to do a completely different and unique Rangers-themed website that didn't look like any other website, and there was a big deal about it, and it was a long, drawn-out public argument, essentially, between the Rangers and the NHL over their website. There's always been, certainly with Jimmy Dolan in charge, there's always been a weird dynamic between the two. See, if you're the NHL and you read this as it was released yesterday, you say to yourself, the last thing we need right now is for the New York Rangers to add another log to a burning fire that is this Tom Wilson situation.
Right. I couldn't
with
agree
the
more.
Rangers. Like, this is the last... Like, I don't know that this is a throw your hands up in the air and say, well... The NHL didn't do anything about it. I guess it's up to us. And you can't blame us because this is a dereliction of duty by George Perez. We don't want to have to call up players in the American League, you know, that are firing coconuts all over the ice. We're going to have to, you know, we don't want to do this. But because George didn't do his job, we have to do this. We have to go out there and defend ourselves. Is that how you read the statement? Because I kind of do.
Yeah, it's a little bit like a pre-pardon. Like if you guys won't stick up for us, well, we can't be held accountable for what comes next. The other thing I'm just racking my brain over what would be reasons or benefits for the Rangers. Like maybe you endear yourself to your own fan base a bit here.
Huge, 100%.
Right? Like, okay, you know, it's us against the league, you know, even though we're the New York Rangers, like we're being wronged here. I wonder if there's a unifying factor there, but like, I just, it's ridiculous. It's unprofessional, I think. You know, whatever you think of the play, I don't think calling for a guy's job, unfit for duty, like, get out of here. I didn't have any time for that.
Yeah, the thing about it too is, for George, regardless of who's in that position, okay, whether it's, you know, George Perros or Brendan Shanahan or whomever is next in that spot, there is a narrow lane you drive in. And these lanes are determined by the general managers and the NHL. We talked about this yesterday. The Department of Player Safety doesn't just make up numbers based on how they feel. Like George Perros doesn't look, or anyone in that, you know, the head of the Department of Player Safety doesn't look at that situation and say, well, man, I'm really sick of Tom Wilson. I'm going to get rid of him.
That's Tom Wilson. You're right. I think they are sick of Tom Wilson. This isn't excuse enough.
Yeah, They don't have evidence based on previous behavior and or example to quote unquote throw any type of book at Tom Wilson. Like there's the act and then there's the reaction. Okay, and you can say like the act is Artemi Panarin jumping on Tom Wilson and the reaction was way overboard. But then are you suspending someone for being too strong?
Yeah. Right? So like there's plenty of reason I think, Jeff, to like throw the book at him, but like this incident, if they don't think it's suspendable, you can't do it. So here's the awkward thing. What I think the NHL, why I think the NHL has got it coming for Tom Wilson here, is the league tries to exist in this gray area between they want fireworks and physical play and excitement. Like, no one thinks the Battle of Alberta last year was bad for the NHL, right? Like, must-see TV, ratings up, attend eyeballs, everyone's reading everything you write about it. It's good for the NHL. The NHL wants a little bit of that in the game. However, they're not allowed to want that publicly because people can get hurt and they can't be seen as endorsing that. And there are lawsuits and they are worried about player health. So they kind of try to walk this line between we are cleaning the game up, which, by the way, they are. You know, blindside headshots are down. Fighting is decreasing over and over. Like, they are cleaning up the game a bit. But they have to say they want to clean up the game, but at the same time keep this in it. So they try to exist in this gray area, and what Tom Wilson keeps doing is shining a light on the gray area where they're exposing the NHL and making the NHL endorse things outright, explicitly say we're okay with what just happened here, and it's driving them crazy. And I think Tom Wilson is, whether he views that as like endorsement of the way he plays and he's going to do something else next or not, whatever he does next, and he's going to do something next, whether this year, next year, or 3 years from now, he is going to get smoked because the NHL does not like publicly highlighting the gray area where they try to exist.
Specifically as they enter a new arrangement with both ESPN and TNT. And again, I can't underscore this enough. It happened in New York. And tonight is another game between these two teams. And listen, like, there's a lot of, you know, outside of the Tom Wilson issue with the Washington Capitals and the Rangers, Caps have problems. Samsonov is not playing. Yevgeny Kuznetsov placed on the COVID-19 list. They were...
What's up with him?
So they didn't play in the last game either. Ovechkin is still out with a lower body injury. Vanacek gets a start. TJ Oshie comes back to the lineup. And all that anybody seems to want to, and we're included in this one as well, I'm not excluding us, talk about is the Tom Wilson situation. Do you think anything happens tonight?
Yeah. You know, my gut is just like, yeah. Like, everyone's talking about it. Like, the players read this stuff too. They watch SportsCenter. Like, this is the lead story on every network. This would be the type of stuff that, you know, they're taking in all the dumb stuff people like us say, and then they disagree with it, and they talk about it on the bus. Like, they're aware this is coming to a head. So I don't know what happens, but I can't see them just skating by Wilson all day and telling him have a nice night. But I don't know what the solution is either. So
Wilson? Do you think it's Wilson they go after?
Well, I don't think they can go after Wilson, so, but it
seems no one that really can.
Particularly evil if they're going to hunt, you know, the star player, and I know we've talked about it as a possibility. I don't know, but I just don't think nothing happens.
Like, I look at that statement and I say, like, from the Rangers, where you're calling for the head of the Department of Player Safety under the umbrella of dereliction of duty, and, like, to your point, that's almost like saying, like, look, like, I'm just going to start punching, and if you don't get out of the way, that's your fault.
Yeah, and the league has not gotten out of the way here. So, yeah, it is a fascinating situation. I just cannot wait to hear. Like, you can't criticize a referee without getting fined, right? Like, after the game, if a player were to say they disagree with a referee's call, that costs the money. What does it cost when you say you disagree with the head of the league's Department of Player Safety and that the guy is unfit for duty?
Yeah. That's a league official. That's a league official. And like, this is getting into sort of, you know, uncharted territory here. But there's
by the way, Jeff, it's also wild to not just have someone say it in a press conference or in an interview, like to print a formal statement about it is something else.
Thought about, probably lawyered, discussed at the highest level, and then someone had to make the decision to say, like, we've all done stuff like that. Like, when you're like, oh, I'm angry, I'm going to send out a fire tweet, and you write it. But right before you hit send, you just say, take a breath, go for a walk. Ah, it's not worth it. Discard. Don't do it.
Oh, my God. That's my life is spent deleting tweets. It's a lot of my own tweets that I wanted to send. Yeah.
But someone in that Rangers organization said, no, that's good. Put that out. That's what we want. It's the Rangers versus the NHL. And that's what they have right now. And that's where, you know, the danger comes in. You know, we've talked about dangerous situations in the NHL before, where there is a seemingly inconsistent standard for what is a penalty and what is a suspension. And if you go into a game, like, I've always maintained this, if you go into a game where the players don't know where the line is, like, they don't know what's a penalty, they don't know what's a suspension based on just what just happened, all of a sudden, you have a potentially really dangerous situation.
Yeah,
no one knows where the line is.
Yeah, it's what comes with, like, trying to live in the gray area. And, you know, all the times I say this, I don't want it to sound like I'm saying they shouldn't try to live in the gray area, because I like the gray area. I like that there is some physical play, and that I also like that they've made way for, you know, Svechnikov to do the Svechnikov and not get cross-checked in the throat. 20 years ago, if he did the Svechnikov, or, you know, go back to the 90s, you might get murdered. Someone would throw a tire iron on the ice. Like, everybody, you couldn't do those sorts of things. So I like that they're opening up room for creativity and all that, but I also like that it can go the other way. So they try to live in a tough space where at times it's going to go the wrong way. This is certainly one of those times.
You knew something was going to happen last night as well that would make everyone say, look, 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 look. It's like the Wilson situation, because players get thrown to the ice all the time. Were you surprised that it was Crosby on Konechny last night?
No, I would love a career compilation of Crosby wrestling with guys. I bet it's 50 minutes long. You know, like, he's so competitive, and he's always getting into it with other competitive players. See, this is, you know, I was thinking about this the other day. You know, your old podcast co-host, Greg Wyshynski, wrote an article yesterday. You know, a good one on the assessment of Tom Wilson and the whole scenario. And talked about, you know, these wrestling plays and these competitive plays. I've sort of lost my exact point, what it was from Wyshynski's article. But the long and the short was just that these things do happen with a guy like Crosby, with these competitive players. Okay, Sorry, let me just reset here, Jeff. So the thing from the Wyszynski article was 4-on-4. He was saying that you got to go one way or the other with the league. His point was that if you want to be a league that doesn't have this stuff, no gray area, go 4-on-4, you know, open up the ice, you really clean it up, no penalties, no fighting, and just lean into that speed and skill and that sort of aspect of it. I don't think the NHL ever wants to be that, but I do think that if you do something like that, the nature of hockey still brings it out, this like Crosby and Konechny stuff, where as clean as you'd ever want to make hockey, this stuff is going to happen. You can't exist within the confines of a boarded playing surface and not get competitive. Guys are fighting for pucks. It's always going to be a part of the sport just by the nature of hockey. No matter what you try to do to make it, you know, tiddlywinks, non-contact, it's always going to be physical. You know, look at the women's game, which gets physical and competitive and animated just the same. You can't legislate it out of hockey. It's always going to be there no matter what you try to do to clean it up.
Just as an aside, because I've always thought about this and given this a lot of brain cells over the years, the thing about hockey, unlike a lot of other sports, is it almost feels like while you're playing it or while you're involved, and listen, you played at a much higher level than I ever did, it almost feels like a different world. It feels like fantasy land. You put on a very specific uniform, you go onto the field of play, and there's no out of bounds. There are boards that keep you in play. You know, football, you run out of bounds. Basketball, you run out of bounds. This is all contained. And there is that, and there's glass around it, and everybody looks in as if they're, you know, there's an arena full of voyeurs staring inside this room, watching you compete in this event. Like, there is that element of fantasy where the real world rules don't apply.
Mm-hmm. No,
and
it
then
is
there's,
true.
There's this sport that's played at a breakneck speed with contact, with violence, and we expect everybody in a lot of ways whenever these situations happen to be nice boys and girls and not try to hurt anybody.
Well, like, you've played non-contact shinny before where it's gotten violent. Like, much as
this is a quick aside. I've played in a lot of media games before, and you know what I've found? So weird. It's a bizarre phenomenon. The people who are very vocal about having a distaste for violence in hockey, as far as like hockey writers go, in these games that I've played before, are the worst.
Yeah.
Are the dirtiest, most violent, mouthy. Like, they are the worst. And it's all the people that are like, okay, well, it's hockey. Things happen out there. Usually are the calmest out there. That's what I've sort of always noticed.
Next time any Toronto media people are talking to Kyle Dubas, ask him about playing shinny. He won't even play staff shinny because he gets so competitive. He's afraid he's going to try to hurt someone. Like, he, you know, this guy that everyone thinks is like a computer geek and whatever, like, he just, you know, he can't turn it off. And I think that's a thread among hockey people. But like, I just think that because hockey is always going to have this aspect of it and that the NHL is accepting of it, it looks bad on them. But I don't know that there's a way to have this game exist without it. I was going to say, with the non-contact shinny, you know, I've played a game where we're all paying to play, and, you know, one guy's shooting a puck into the other team's bench because he's mad at that guy and this guy, and there's fights, and it's like, this is supposed to be non-contact. It's just, it's a part of hockey, no matter what rules you want to impose. You know, that the league is okay with a measure of it, to me, is more of an understanding of the game. You know, it's a fundamental part of it. So I love that where the league tries to live on this. It's just a really hard thing to do, and sometimes it's going to cause problems.
Okay, more on this at the bottom of the hour with Mike Fuda, who'll be joining us, former NHL assistant general manager. And I'm sure he has a strong opinion on what has happened and what might happen later on tonight at Madison Square Garden. Meanwhile, Ottawa Senators, Montreal Canadiens tonight. A couple of things here. No Thomas Chabot for the remainder of the season. Man, did Logan Stanley catch him with a huge hit on Monday. So that's it there. For Montreal, third place is still very much a conversation. Right now, they are tied with the Winnipeg Jets for that spot at 57 points. Each team has 57 games, six games remaining in the schedule. For the Ottawa Senators, if you take away their bad start, Justin, and make no mistake, it was awful, right? Like, we're talking about, like, who's getting fired here, like, within the first month. If you take away the horrible start, that's not a bad team. And that team is probably a team that we look at and we say, because every year there's a surprise team that comes out of nowhere and you say, wow, they've sort of exceeded expectations. If you take away Ottawa's start, the Sens are the answer to that question. Who's the most surprising team in the NHL?
Yeah. Yeah, that's to be expected with a young team and new coach and trying to figure everything out. It's to be expected that things would be a little bit rocky in the early going. But, you know, we talked about this a bit yesterday. It's always dangerous assessing what a team is after there's no stakes. You know, sure. It's the biggest thing in the early going, though, Jeff, is just they couldn't get a save. You know, like if they got decent goaltending, it might have been a different story in the early going. The best thing there is that there is a visible plan to get to competitive. And that was all you wanted to see from a team that was near historically bad in the past. So here's to hoping they got things figured out for real and not just some late season flurry here.
One of the things that in a season like this, you look for, okay, so what's the good that's come out of it? Like, what have you learned about this team? To your point, like, where's the vision? Where's the path? And you're right, with the Ottawa Senators, you can see it. Philip Gustafson looks really good. Like, the netminder looks, and you wonder if, like, maybe this is the guy after all. He was outstanding Monday against the Jets. But the one thing that I keep coming back to is Brady Tkachuk, Josh Norris, Drake Batherson. The one thing we can say about the Ottawa Senators is they have a line, a young line that you can see being together for a long time. Tkachuk and Norris already have a background playing with the U.S. development program together. You add Drake Batherson to that mix on the right side, and all of a sudden, you know, you're Pierre Dorion, you say, okay, that's taken care of. Now we can do other business. But the question becomes, you know, Brady Tkachuk is a restricted free agent here. And the one question we've always had about any Ottawa Senators team as they, you know, start to wind up their winning cycle, will they spend to keep all these players?
Yeah, well, they have to. They absolutely have to. They're going to lose a fan base. Like, I understand that the fans have stuck through a lot, but after losing Mark Stone and Erik Karlsson and Matt Duchene and everyone else, I don't think they're going to stand for it. I honestly don't think you can do it again. Like, yeah, we're going to rebuild and then sell it off. So I do think that they're going to make a real effort to keep these players and be competitive. And, you know, what's interesting now is you always think when you're a fan of a rebuilding team that you need some stars and then you're going to be okay. Well, mm-hmm. You know, the Toronto Maple Leafs have had Auston Matthews and Mitch Marner and Willie Nylander for 4 years now and not got out of the first round. So what else do you have? What else is going to happen there? How do they fill in around, you know, their what looks like going to be a good first line in the league? Because it's not as simple as just acquiring a few players. It's the hardest thing to do, but it's just the first step.
Absolutely. Edmonton Oilers. And more specifically, Connor McDavid, because that's what we're all watching here, right? Oof. Like, all these remaining games, and right now McDavid is on a 102-point pace. Like, I don't know about you, but I just watch Oilers games right now just to see if McDavid can get there. Two assists, right, in the win over the Canucks. He needs 7 points in 5 games to hit 100. And no one thinks he can't do it.
Yeah, it was crazy. Like, looking at the numbers a month ago, it would have seemed impossible, but he is just on an absolute tear. I think he has 24 points in his last 9 games. You know, 24 points would put you probably in the top 100 in scoring in the league, I would imagine, in the last 9 games. So yeah. It is at the point where it is historic must-watch TV. And last night was the first time that there was other games I would have rather watched, but I was like, let me just see what McDavid's up to. Because, like, I can't, yeah. You know, he's down the home stretch here. I'm not going to miss, you know, whatever weirdness. It feels like when Gretzky got 50 and 39, he scored 5 goals in his last game. Yeah. It feels like that to me, where, like, whatever happens here, if he gets blanked for the next 4 games, in the last game he's getting 7 points. Like, it's going to happen. He's getting there one way or the other.
Yeah, like, don't you get the feeling that if he's going to get 100, he's going to get 104?
Well, I do now. I said 100 clean the other day, but he's really starting to make it attainable here, more than I thought he would.
I don't even know where else you go with Connor McDavid at this point. He seems he has the Hart Trophy wrapped up.
He good.
And yeah, like, but like, who do you put as number two? To me, the Hart Trophy race is, okay, who's going to be the runner up?
Yeah.
For the Hart Trophy.
Yeah.
Who's going to be that guy?
Matthews in the conversation. McKinnon always there. You know, it's it is a fast.
You know who put forward a really interesting theory or an interesting name? Mark Lazarus, who covers the Blackhawks for The Athletic. Mm-hmm. The name he put forward is a really interesting one. UC Soros.
Who? I'm kidding.
Netminder for the Nashville Predators.
Yeah, is he otherworldly this year?
I have well, if you look at what he's been able to do and what the Preds have been able to do, namely claw off them, I mean, they're a bottom of the NHL, right? I mean, we look at that St. Louis Blues run, and we say, wow, the Jordan Binnington show, guy was amazing. Same thing for Soros, man.
Yeah, what's is he playing all the games?
All
or
of
I
them.
Thought they were splitting it there, no?
Nope, that stopped. He's got all of them. Soros is an amazing story for the Preds. And that's not even wrapped up.
Pitching a 928 this year. Yeah, 928. It's an unbelievable year. 34 games played.
Not bad. And he might not even win the Vezina.
Is Vasilevskiy's numbers? I see. I don't get a vote this year, so I'm halfway tuned out.
Neither do I. I'm off the list. I didn't make the cut this year.
I got the boot. Me too.
They chiseled it all down.
I think they know. They're on to us with the North Division this season. They're like, you don't know.
They know we're phonies. Like, Merrick, what do you know? Like, seriously, they don't know wrist off from a wrist watch, Merrick. Like, seriously, man.
Vasilevskiy's a 929 through 39 games.
Is that good?
I think that's good.
Yeah. Okay, Mike Feuda joins us here in a couple of moments. We're going to get on a couple of different pages here. We'll talk about some of the playoff races around the NHL. Should talk as well about the Seattle Kraken, and if Mike Feuda were the GM, what would he do there? But as we come back from break here in a couple of moments, we'll get Futz's thoughts on the Tom Wilson situation. Do we see more Wilson drama tonight at MSG? And if so, what is the nature of it? Mike Feuda here from the NHL on Sportsnet, former NHL executive, right here on the program, Hockey Central. We continue in moments. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Welcome back to the program here Monday to Friday at noon. Merrick alongside Bourne. This is Hockey Central. Thank you for joining us once again today. Later on tonight, we have the Habs and the Sens on Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey. Pre-game starting at 6:30. The puck drops just after 7. Also at 7, make sure you have NHL Live. It's the Washington Capitals and the New York Rangers. Mike Feuda joins us now. And before we talk, and Feuds, thanks so much as always for joining us here. Before we get to talking about Tom Wilson, etc., what can you tell me about Randy Savage?
Oh, yeah. I'm right into it. I'm sitting here. I've got the replay of the Edmonton game in the background, and I pulled up my A&E app, and my old wrestling bug hit me as I found a Randy Macho Man Savage bio. So I'm just watching horrifying acts of violence everywhere.
Oh wow! Look at you go. Was he one of your guys, Futes? I mean, I was always huge Savage fan.
Oh yeah,
but, I mean,
huge,
what about you?
Huge. I used to, when I played with the Marlies and stuff, part of the perks of being down at the Gardens was you get to stick around and stuff. And I just became a huge wrestling fan. And my mom would stick around with me and my sister, and just we'd get there, and as they arrived and stuff, I was right into it. So, but I was devastated when I dipped some of the Iron Sheik's blood in a napkin and found out it was real blood. I always thought it was fake, but incredible stuff. Total entertaining. That was back in the teen days. It's funny how some of us sit there and just laugh and joke. And then fast forward to my days in Owen Sound, the WWE came, and I remember John Cena coming in and asking for a Bobby Ryan jersey. So it was always my closet entertainment factor, but, again, what a way to kill some couple hours on a Saturday afternoon.
Oh, no, it's fantastic. Listen, I can go on with you plenty here about professional wrestling. And I would imagine at the Harry Lumley Bayshore, the place just popping like the cork out of a champagne bottle when John Cena walked out in a Bobby Ryan jersey. That's pretty cool. Speaking
where's
of pro
Stewie?
Wrestling.
Where's Stewie, Jeff? Speaking of pro wrestlers, where's Stewie? Did he pull
Stewie
a motivator cuff today?
No. Stewie is on TV with us tonight, so he's taking the entire day to try to figure out what he wants to say about Tom Wilson tonight on television.
Well, he got pummeled yesterday, so he better have something to say tonight.
No, he hung in there. He hung in there. On this show, on Tim and Friends, like he was in there swinging. Let's get your thoughts on it. First of all, how did you see the act itself? The subsequent non-suspension and maybe a speculation on what we see this evening, if anything.
Okay, the act itself, I was there's a whole bunch of different chapters, and I mean, I had a great talk with Kevin BX. I find it fascinating because we're really, everybody's got the idea of this code, right? This yeah. code, and it's been discussed since the Simmons thing, and I mean, it's one thing for me to speculate. I know from a management standpoint how I see it, but the actual players themselves and how they look at it, it's just such a multi-tentacled monster, so to speak. But this is the way I saw it. First of all, if Tom Gordon went into the New York Rangers dressing room and said, listen, guys, the league has just awarded us Tom Wilson, Buzhnevich and Panarin would pay his salary. Okay, so this is yeah. this is a valuable, valuable hockey player. That being said, I didn't like the look of it. I didn't like this is a guy, I thought it was very selfish on his behalf. If I was Todd McLellan or Chara or somebody else, I'd pull him aside and tell him that. I just think here's a guy that's an invaluable piece. You're sitting on six previous suspensions. You're playing a team that has nobody in the lineup that can defend themselves, which you're well aware of when you're in that role. And he put his team in jeopardy because he could have easily woken up the next day looking at the season and the playoffs, based on how it was judged or how Panarin fell to the ice. And that's just devastating to the Washington Capitals to not have that player in the lineup. I didn't like the act itself. I think he's very fortunate that he didn't hit his head in the ice, Panarin. I also, even more than that, Tom Wilson is better than the little show in the penalty box after. Because that, when you see that, yeah. it shows me a guy that hasn't learned from his previous suspensions when he's almost mocking what just took place. The act itself, you know, the people that say he should be out of hockey, and I think that's ridiculous and crazy. But that being said, I didn't like it at all. I didn't like the look, and I felt that he should have been punished a little bit more harshly, just to remind him that, buddy, you're walking a tight line here, and that's enough. That's enough's enough. Now, the letter from the Rangers, oof. I don't know whether that was like someone trying to win a Pulitzer Prize or something, but that did nothing for me. I thought that was basically, you know, all speculation. I mean, whatever. Plus, it's, I mean, I was talking to John Shannon last night, and he said the last time someone was fined, I think the jersey, I think, got fined $1 million, whether they ever paid it or not. I'm sure Lou didn't have to pay it. But when that Don Kaharski donut incident.
Yeah, Jim Schoenfeld, yeah.
Yeah, for the verbal abuse in the room. Now this, I'm sure that the next statement that comes out from the league is probably going to be a $1 million slap at the Rangers, which I just didn't see the point of the letter. You're basically, first of all, I mean, this team, in their heyday, they had Kosher, Domi. I mean, they drafted Dylan McIlrath 10th overall. So this is a team that right now, they're just, with all the skill they've added, they proved they've got glaring toughness deficiencies. And this horrifying act of violence, I just found it was just, I just thought the letter was not good. Not good. And I guess I'm sure the New York Rangers faithful loved it, but I just felt it just made their organization look sour for the wrong reasons.
The thing about it is, like I said, I'm sure, Mike, and with Mike Fuda, Mike, I'm sure you've been at various times in your career angry enough to write a letter like that. But what you do is you write it and then you stick it in a drawer. You know, like you get it out of your system. Like, I just don't know what the value is in going so public with being so upset about a non-suspension where you know it's going to end up costing your organization. Like, you know it's going to, like, how many times have you wanted to do something like that and then just said, you know what, I'm going to write it out so I get it out of my system and then stick it in my desk drawer and throw away the key?
Well, I learned a lesson in junior, just that, and it was that my emotions were so high, and I think it was, I don't know whether it was Bob Sanguinetti, one of our players at the time, was hit from behind, there was no call. And I went right to the ref's room and piled on him, right? And I didn't take that deep breath and think about what was going on and have that discussion. I mean, I just again, I think at that level of hockey, you have to know. I'm assuming that that's the owner saying send that out, like it's a statement, mm-hmm. it's not signed by. So and in that case, with Mr. Dolan, I mean, he has every right to do whatever he wants, but obviously the talking people below him, I'm not sure they weren't signing their name to it. No. But when the owner says it's time to send a letter, you send a letter. But I just didn't think it was a good look. And I think it proved nothing. other than that they're really sour. And now you put the lights on tonight's game. And, I mean, what are you going to do? What are they going to – basically, to me, it says that you have to – and this isn't now that we're going to go back to the Predator, you know, have a guy on the bench that doesn't play any minutes and has to go out, and they've got to hire a bodyguard to take on Tom Wilson. But it kind of does address a need that you have in your lineup, that you've got to get tougher as a team. And so people like that – and I do agree that Tom Wilson – if he knows exactly who's on that other lineup. I remember I talked to Milan Lucic about this all the time because I wanted to know his thoughts about, because in LA we kept talking about, we had Curtis McDermott, and once Kyle Clifford moved on there, we had all these young players and there was really nobody to look after them, so to speak. And I felt that if we took Curtis McDermott out of the mix, that would really jeopardize if the team wanted to take liberties on our smaller, younger, skilled players. And I talked to Luch about it, and he said, Pete, if I come into Los Angeles and I know Dermy's there, he goes, I think twice about running around. He goes, I think twice about running around. And it's not like Luch is scared of anybody, but it's just that factor that goes in your mind that there will be some repercussions. And I don't think anything's going to happen tonight. I could be very, very wrong, but Tom Wilson, again, has put his team in a situation where, you know, they're talking about this and something could happen. Now, if Washington sits out Tom Wilson, what's to keep the Rangers? I mean, I've talked to Kevin, we actually talk about this all the time, is you're not going to win going after Tom Wilson because he's just going to beat you up.
Yep.
So, you know what? You go after... You go after one of their skilled players, you know. You go after, you know, I don't think Ovechkin's playing, but there's enough skill in Washington that you go after. The only problem there is there's a 6'9" guy that's tougher than Wilson.
Yeah.
It's just there's layers that you can't win. You just can't win. But I didn't like the look of it. I think Tom Wilson is not only a better player, but a better person than that. And I would hope that he'd want a mulligan and call it back on the way he handled it. And again, it could have gone much differently for him and really not only physically injured the players on the other team for an unnecessary reason, but also really jeopardized his chance his team in advancing because they need him to play.
Fuchs, where would you stand on team accountability for players in your lineup? Like if guys are getting suspended, the team facing some sort of fine, I think the league feels like the Capitals have enabled Wilson and they're part of the problem in all this, but there's not much they can do to hold them accountable. In the past, Mario Lemieux had mentioned having something like that for players on the team, and I don't think it ever took. What are your thoughts on how that would work? Is it a good idea, or is it just not going to make a difference one way or another?
Could you explain that one more? Sorry.
Like having the team actually pay a fine for their players getting suspended. So every time Tom Wilson gets a fine or gets a suspension, the team would face, you know, a $500,000 fine at this point or some sort of punishment where the owner says, we don't want to employ the type of people who can risk the owner's pocketbook in the way that someone like Wilson or at the time, the way Matt Cook was or could have done for the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Okay. No, I see. The $5,000 thing is, I mean, honestly, that's a tip at lunch for some of these guys. So that doesn't do anything. That's why I really felt it was a chance. And trust me, I love George Parros, so this is not any kind. But I just felt, and I know a lot of minds go into these decisions. It's not George locked in a telephone booth doing it by himself.
Yep.
But I just think that this guy, Tom Wilson, it just was a dangerous, dangerous play that it has to take into consideration that. And I was wrong. I guess he's had a one of 10 games and he's had a 7-gamer. So they haven't all been like one gamers or, you know, $5,000 for cross-checking and stuff like that. Like he's been on the mat enough to know that this, it was just not necessary to do. And again, you get back to, I know you have a strong stance. I know Christopher Stieg must've been just losing his mind somewhere because he talks about protecting skilled players and the stars in the league. And that was just, I just felt that there should have been something that reminds him. And the only way you're going to hurt is if you start the playoffs missing Tom Wilson for a couple games. I think that hurts them more than, if it's a huge fine, that's fine as well. But I just think you've got to send that message that could have gone so much worse. And again, I don't want to use real life analogies, but it is. It's if you've got somebody that's got a history of violence, and violence is a big part of hockey, but crossing the line, that you have to look at each incident. You just can't judge that as a standalone thing, because you've had this talk with them before. And in a lot of the cases, he doesn't even bother going in for the, my understanding is he doesn't even go in for the face-to-face interviews anymore, because it's like, well, you know, whatever, you're going to throw the book at me anyway. So You've got to keep delivering the message until he gets the message. And I think the way you get that across is have the team not have that player available, even if it's for the first game of play. You know how tight it is in the playoffs. Even if it's for that one game, it matters. And then you'll think twice about, this guy's always going to play hard. And that's the thing. It's not like he's one of these guys that, like, it's so different from the situation with Simmons. This is not a guy like, if all of a sudden you play, this was against the team with the tough guy, that Tom Wilson is going to go out and not throw down whatever who they put out against him. He's going to stand up for himself, but I just felt this was so unnecessary, and it did need to have a little bit more than the $5,000 slap on the wrist.
Yeah, the thing about that one is that's negotiated in the CBA. Like, that's an agreement between the NHL and the Players Association.
No, yeah, so, like, I know. I agree with that. Just, but yeah, that, but a game, a suspension game is well within their limits to do that and to say, you know what, you're missing the rest of the regular season.
Yeah.
In some cases, go ahead.
I was going to say, like, the issue, if you're just going to say, like, okay, let's just throw one game at Tom Wilson, when you throw in the history and most recently the 7-game suspension for the hit on Brandon Carlo, there's no such thing as a 1-game suspension left for Tom Wilson anymore.
No, but
like,
they,
you're
they
like,
do,
if you're, if you're going to suspend him, it's 20.
No, they have a translation. I think when you've got something where there is no, I mean, I guess Pennern is injured, but I think they do that where they measure what a playoff game is as opposed to a regular season game. So
right,
I think there is a medium there. There is a medium, yeah, where there's something that can be thrown that really does affect the ability for them to ice their best team because of a lack of discipline. I just don't. And again, if I hate to say it, but if the player was, I mean, I guess Pennern is injured.
Yes.
And you start to get into a much larger suspension, but I don't know. I don't think that was a 20 gamer, but you can just make so many arguments for it. I just think something, because the bottom line, Tom Wilson, what were you thinking, bud? Like, what were you thinking?
Yeah.
It was so unnecessary that you got away with it, and that's, I don't think that's the right message to send.
We'll see what happens tonight. Okay, back to your Randy Macho Man Savage documentary, Fuchs. Back to the treadmill and the wrestling docks.
Now I can go on more. Now I can go watch more horrifying acts of violence. For this.
Elbow drop from the top rope, Fuchs. Attaboy.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Enjoy. Thanks, Fuchs.
Mike Fuda from the NHL and Sportsnet, former NHL executive as well. Let's wrap this thing up here in a couple of moments. A final thought on who knows really what's going to happen this evening between these two teams and that one player specifically. It's Hockey Central. We're back in a moment. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. All right, welcome back to the program. Merrick alongside Bourne. Tonight, 6:30 Eastern pregame, Ottawa Senators, Montreal Canadiens on Scotiabank Wednesday night hockey. 9 games on the go around the NHL this evening. Jets and Flames as Winnipeg and Montreal locked in a battle for third spot in the Scotia North Division. Eyes on that one. The Preds are playing, the Stars are playing, battle for fourth in the Central there in the final playoff spot. A couple of notes here, Borny, get your thoughts on this. This is from Chris Johnston from the Maple Leafs practice today. No sign of Nick Foligno. Joe Thornton goes into that top spot with Matthews and Marner. Justin Hall returns wearing the full cage after taking the puck to the face. Zach Hyman and Riley Nash. They were in red sweaters. That is indicative of no contact. Thank you very much. And Frederick Anderson taking part in the skate today. Of those 4 items, choose from the a la carte menu, Borny.
Well, I think the most important one is Zach Hyman is back and skating. You know, that's, well, Freddie Anderson obviously up there too, but Zach Hyman being back is good news. The Foligno thing, a little bit of a concern. You know, you want to get your value out of that deadline deal, and every game he misses makes it look like you paid a higher price per game, which is not ideal. Stefan Nason potentially going to get a look with
That's
the Toronto
right.
Maple Leafs. Not too sure what to expect there, make that, but this is a good time to figure out what you have with all the pieces in your lineup. So always fun to get more viewings and see how he looks in his Maple Leafs debut.
Leafs next in action tomorrow against the Montreal Canadiens. One thing about Riley Nash as well, I mean, it looks like it's sort of full steam ahead and he'll be available for the playoffs for the Toronto Maple Leafs. It almost seems as if initially that fourth line center spot was just being held for him. How much is Adam Brooks complicating that decision?
Certainly somewhat, but I think what Brooks does is quite different from what Nash would do, and I think what Nash does is something more appealing to the Leafs in terms of face-offs, defensive acumen. You know, Brooks is a savvy all-around player, but does not strike me as a guy built for NHL playoffs. Nash has had success against the Leafs in that exact scenario, so while it complicates things, I think more than anything, it just provides you depth and provides you comfort if one of the guys isn't looking great.
Really quickly, Maple Leafs doing some business today. A one-year deal for Kirill Semenov from Avant-Garde Omsk KHL Champions. Now, the only reason I bring it up is the music plays for winding down here. The only reason I bring it up is I expect to see this every season out of the Maple Leafs, where they're bringing in Russian players to see if they can hang, or other types of players from Europe, whether it's Mikko Lehtinen, Alexander Barabanov. And if it doesn't work out, they find them jobs, but they keep that pipeline open, it seems, through Dan Milstein's Gold Star company.
Savvy. Savvy. Well done. You get a look at the guy, and sometimes you find gold, and when you don't, it's not a huge cost to you. So I think it's really well played and always fun to see who it is they brought over this time.
Yeah. Worked out with Ilya Mikheyev. That is very much for sure. All right. Tonight, Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey, 7 o'clock. It is the Montreal Canadiens and the Ottawa Senators, but eyes on MSG and the Monster.